Every snowflake is different. The same is true when it comes to winter tires. Here at the New Lloydminster Nissan, we have tires that are better on snow and ice, while some have better traction in heavy snow and some last longer. Not one tire does it all. But here at the New Lloydminster Nissan, we find you the tires that best work for you and your winter driving. And even better than that, you'll love the price with all our tires at cost. Safety and savings here at the New Lloydminster Nissan with our winter tire sale. Go online at nissanlloydminster.com. Book in your winter tire install now. At the New Lloydminster Nissan, we won't sell you a car or tires. We'll help you buy one.
Lloydminster and area have been hit with a massive snowfall. Officials are warning people to bundle up and keep warm.
Looking to stay warm this winter? Welcome to the warmth of sheepskin.
Looking for warmth? Looking for softness? Looking for comfort? We have ideas for you and your whole family. Visit Sheepskin Loft for friendly service, unique gifts, and natural footwear.
Sheepskin Loft, because we care.
Shop in-store or online, sheepskinloft.com.
While it is good to look at how much has changed in banking since the first Saskatchewan Credit Union was formed in the 30s, it is just as important to look at what has stayed the same. We are with you through thick and thin.
Rooted in tradition and honest values, and driven by innovation to help reach your financial goals.
This commitment to you has defined our entire story, which will never change. That's a promise. Stay tuned, it's only going to get better.
This is Lloydminster's show. This is local that matters to you. Local people. Local events. Local news and sports. For Lloydminster and area, this is Live with Kurt Price from the new Lloydminster Nissan.
Welcome inside the new Lloydminster Nissan. Great to have you joining us. Colleen Young is here. We're going to look back at 2022 and look ahead to 2023 with Saskatchewan and what's been happening in a province that we didn't hear much about in 2022. When you really think about it, when you look and what happened in 2022, just about everything happened on the other side of the border, but Saskatchewan relatively was quiet compared to what was going on in Alberta. Here at the new Lloydminster Nissan, do not pay for 6 months. Get up to $10,000 cash back. We have a huge selection on the lot, and tires right now are at cost as well. If you need some grip to drive around those Lloydminster streets, and some of the parking lots are getting a little icy as well right now. Lloydminster Regional Health Foundation is bringing Jody Carrington to Lloydminster for two shows at the Gold Horse Casino. Both of those shows are sold out. However, the Lloydminster Regional Health Foundation has given us two tickets to the evening show on January 21st to give away. So keep an eye on the new Lloydminster Nissan Facebook page. And we thank the Lloydminster Regional Health Foundation for thinking of us when it comes to giving those tickets away. On Tuesday, Gas Controls and Border City Shield Mechanical are working to raise money for the LPSD breakfast programs by hosting a jail and bail. This is going to be a really fun day where you can arrest anybody you'd like to arrest. And if you don't want to get arrested, you can just turn around and simply arrest someone else. Or if you do get arrested, you're going to spend time at a jail at Gas Controls where there are snacks provided. And if you don't want to spend the full hour inside of that jail, you can pay $1 per minute to get out early as well, or you can have your friends and your family come down and bail you out. So that is coming up on Tuesday, and we'll be broadcasting from Gas Controls, and we will be having some fun as some of the jailers with that as well. So LPSD breakfast programs, and we were told how important they are and how short they are of money this year. So we're looking forward to being a part of that on Tuesday. Border City Farmers Market's on today. That goes 12 to 5 at the Service Sports Center, and they are back this Saturday. Now, next Saturday, Border City Farmers Market will be on again, but it will also be the Lloydminster Fish and Game Association taking over both field houses for their annual Lloydminster Gun and Outdoor Sports Show. General admission is just $10 and will run Saturday from 10 to 6 and Sunday from 10 to 3. And we'll be there. We'll be broadcasting live on location that day. Another chase. The ace draw last night, the Lloydminster Exhibition. No ace was drawn. So that means 44 cards remaining in a jackpot that starts at $47,497. And last night's winner took home just under $2,400. So not only are we seeing the jackpot rise, but those weekly prizes are getting higher and higher as well. All the details are at www.lloydminster.com. Lloyd EX. And you can get a ticket for just $10, even set up a subscription so that it just rolls over all the time, whether you want to buy a $10 ticket or you want to spend a little bit more money and increase your odds a little bit as well. Speaking of the Lloyd Mr. Exhibition, Dana LaRouche, Graydon Kaye joined us on Tuesday with details on Cattleman's Call, which begins tomorrow at the Lloyd X.
Cattle are going to move into the barns this coming Thursday and Friday morning. Yeah. They'll open to the public at noon on Friday. And then our first show is going to kick off. Our beef pen show will be at 3:30 on Friday afternoon. Yeah. The bull session social at 5:30 Friday evening. And that's a really cool one. That's a appetizer social taking place in the barns. Just a fun little mixer. And that was the feedback on that last year was really good. Jim at the exhibition puts on a good spread. And the appetizers were a hit. And there'll be a refreshment bar on site too. So great opportunity to come down and just mingle and yeah. talk bulls.
And it's open to everybody.
It's
not just the exhibitors, the sponsors. It's open to everybody. So to come down and just, you know, have a visit and share stories and yeah.
Yeah. And then Saturday, so Friday is the first day. Saturday, our barns open at 10 in the morning to the public. And then what time's our show kickoff on Saturday? 11.
11
o'clock is when our halter show starts on Saturday.
Not only is Cattleman's Call this weekend, but AgriVisions is right around the corner in early February as well. And we'll have details on that coming up very shortly as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Colleen Young on the reopening of the Saskatchewan Courthouse here in Lloydminster and more.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Wagner, General Manager of the new Lloydminster Nissan.
You're probably wondering, and some have asked, why is it still the new Lloydminster Nissan? Quite simply, we're excited to bring things forward that we consider new to a car dealership. We're proud to support the community through a one-of-a-kind live broadcast with Kirk Price that focuses on events, people, and issues that concern our community. We're proud to work with other businesses to promote local agriculture, our heavy oil industry, and entrepreneurs. We give back to the community through sponsorships, and our employees are encouraged to and excited to volunteer and help in the community. We're the proud new sponsors of the CPCA's Chuckwagon Finals and the CPCA Pro Tour. And of course, we're always excited for our lineup of new Nissan vehicles with great new features. And our new-to-you lineup is just as impressive. We're proud to be the new Lloydminster Nissan. We'll keep looking for new ways to help our customers in our community and very soon announce plans for our new location.
At the new Lloydminster Nissan, we won't sell you a car, we'll help you buy one.
How can you help support the oil and gas industry and jobs in Western Canada? The answer is closer than you think. Sell your scrap metals to PWM Steel. PWM sells scrap iron to Evraz, located in Regina. Evraz's number one customer is the energy sector, building pipes and plates for the oil and gas industry. PWM Steel is your locally owned metal recycler and steel service center in the area. Plus, they're a strong supporter of the community. PWM Steel, your top steel supplier for Alberta and Saskatchewan for 40 years.
At Diamond 7 Meats, we work with local farm families to provide a high-quality product and a great selection for you. Try our mouth-watering smokies, pulled pork, roast beef, and more, made pure and natural with no additives or fillers. We offer custom processing, and our experienced team works for you to provide a selection of sausage, burgers, and jerkies made to your specifications. Take your grilling to the next level with a Yoder smoker. Complete the grilling experience with Canadian-made, award-winning line of House of Q barbecue sauces. We're locally owned and operated, and we look forward to seeing you today.
Lloydminster and area have been hit with a massive snowfall. Officials are warning people to bundle up and keep warm.
Looking to stay warm this winter? Welcome to the warmth of sheepskin.
Looking for warmth? Looking for softness? Looking for comfort? We have ideas for you and your whole family. Visit Sheepskin Loft for friendly service, unique gifts, and natural footwear.
Sheepskin Loft, because we care.
Shop in-store or online, sheepskinloft.com.
Hey, welcome back inside the new Lloydminster Nissan. It's great to have Colleen Young with us, MLA for Lloydminster on the Saskatchewan side of the border, of course. And it has been a while since we've chatted with Colleen. And when I said that not much has happened in Saskatchewan in 2022, I could see her shaking her head and going, which planet are you on, Kurt?
Right.
Are you kidding me? There's been absolutely everything. But let's start with local, Colleen, and thanks for being here. It is really appreciated.
Well, Happy New Year to you,
Yeah,
Kurt.
It's great to have
you
back in again.
For a new year.
Yeah.
So.
Saskatchewan courthouse. When I think of things locally that happened in 2022 in our area, that's the first thing that I think of is the reopening of the Saskatchewan courthouse. Some people getting their jobs back, which was really, really exciting. Some people thought they were retired maybe are now not
retired.
But a new judge is coming in.
Yes.
He's not here yet, right?
No, February 1st. Yes, will be here.
Oh, so we know the judge now?
Yes.
Oh, okay,
There has been a new judge appointed, and he will start on February 1st here.
So was it because of the uproar that we got the Saskatchewan courthouse reopened? Was there an outcry from, I know there was from lawyers, because they came on this show.
Yeah.
I know that some RCMP had said some, you know, had said some things about it's taking a long time for them and things like that. What transpired to, like, was it just like we got to find a judge first?
No, it was me.
Okay,
sorry.
Right, okay.
I'll be honest. I mean, at first when I understood they were going to make it a full circuit and only judges from North Battleford were going to come to do the circuit and they weren't replacing Judge Young as a full-time judge here. And his always was a circuit court, and it still is, right? So, but that, you know, I had gone to the Minister of Justice at the day then and also expressed to him that this needed to be reconsidered and there needed to be some conversation around it because I knew it wasn't going to work.
Yeah, you kind of had firsthand, yeah.
Absolutely. So it went ahead with the closure anyways, despite, you know, what I was saying. And by summertime and early spring, the lawyers began with letter writing. I'd heard from not just the local RCMP here, but Onion Lake, Maidstone, prosecutors, people in the community who, and typically it's some of our most vulnerable people who don't have the means to go to North Battleford for a ticket mm-hmm. or to appear in court for some other charges. So it was a challenge for folks. And the time that it was consuming out of our detachments in order to transport prisoners and sit there all day, or, you know, either here and take them out of their jurisdiction when the judge did come here, or having to transport them to North Battleford, it takes the RCMP and it takes prosecutors and people out of their jurisdiction because they weren't all coming from there. North Battleford of Courthouse was also seeing some of their own challenges with the changes that were made with people leaving the system there that were working in the office. So they were in the process of trying to hire new staff. So staff was traveling from across the province to come and do court here,
right,
which is not necessarily a savings to anybody. So met with RCMP, met with EMS workers even, met with lawyers, met with prosecutors and folks in North Battleford. My colleague Ryan Domitar was with me as well, and because he'd been hearing the same thing from the area and particularly from the Maidstone detachment. So between the two of them, we were able to work on the new Minister of Justice, Minister Eyre, and get her to, you know, go back through the files, see where the decisions were made, see where things were needed to be corrected, and put a courthouse that was still here, building that's still usable, and open it up and get it going again. So, yes, since December the 1st, there has been staff hired, and it's back, but the new judge has just been recently appointed here at the beginning of January, so he will start on February the 1st.
That's a win for Lloydminster.
It is a win for Lloydminster.
It's a huge win.
It means folks can now come and pay tickets here. They don't have to travel. That the detachments can have the sheriff deal with, you know, prisoners, and they can go back and do their work that they're supposed to be doing and providing safety for people in their communities.
Okay, that's what I thought of when I thought of 2022. Anything else you'd like to brag about?
The two new high schools, their additions on the high school that I was able to help support in getting the funding for them to expand because their numbers are growing. And it's good to see we have an opening of part of Holy Rosary coming up here at the end of the month or in the beginning of February. I've already toured theirs. They're almost complete other than the gym isn't quite there yet, the addition onto it.
Yeah.
Or not the gym, the labs and stuff upstairs. And I've toured the comp, and they're coming along quite nicely, too. So both will be ready for in the fall, and it's good to see that. So they're quite happy, and I'm happy that I was able to make those things happen as well.
Inflation has been the biggest concern. We saw a $500. I called it Modo, right in front of Scott when he was here. But $500. I guess the question on everybody's mind is, like, do you think that we're going to see an end to this crazy inflation, interest rates rising in 2022, and we're going to get another $500 if it keeps going up? I mean, that to me is the looking like $500 was, you know, because we didn't budget for this extra money for the price of oil and gas.
Potash. We were very fortunate in 21, 22 that those prices started to rise again and put more money back in the coffers. Our main priority, as we've always said, is to pay down debt.
Yeah.
I mean, so future generations aren't carrying that burden. So that was the first thing we did. $1 billion going towards paying down the debt. And then there was some other money. And of course, it belongs to the public. And the budgets were already being worked on and put in place, so that's why the affordability check came back.
That changes this year, though, because I imagine you'll have that in the budget, right? So what has to be done to stem this inflation, Colleen?
Well, I mean, we as a government, have done everything we can. Like we said, we delivered that $500 affordability check. We paid down the debt. We pulled back on PST, on our fitness and gym memberships, along with those youth recreational things that help support families with young children that want to put them in activities. And then we extended that small business tax to keep our small businesses and our communities going. And I think the federal government plays a bigger role in this, in stemming that inflation, rise in inflation, and the Bank of Canada. As we all know, those interest rates are continuing to go up. They've 9 times, I think, in the last 3 months. Where that's going to go, I don't know.
So So here we see the reduction in the price of gas because of the Alberta government.
Yes.
And would you be in favor of something like that in Saskatchewan, of taking off or cutting the provincial tax on gas? I mean, it doesn't really affect us in the city here, but there's a lot of surrounding areas in your constituency that I'm sure would.
I think, we haven't planned on that. And the reason being is that additional percent that's on our gas tax goes back into every community in this province. It is a road tax. It doesn't go into the coffers. It goes back into rebuilding roads, supporting municipalities on their infrastructure and those kinds of things. So I think people have to understand that that's always been there, and that's the purpose of it. So if we were to pull that back, that means we have to change the programs and the grants and the things that we are providing to communities to keep their infrastructure and their roads maintained and at the level they need to be, and particularly even in this area with heavy oil, right, and the amount of traffic and seeing that, that industry back going. They're not at operating like they were 8 years ago, and we know that. They've had to make adjustments because of the fall in the oil prices, but it's good to see that they are back and functioning, and as you can see around town, the number of signs looking for, skilled employees, they could be doing a lot more. So I think that that needs to stay there in order for us to continue to support our rural and our city infrastructures.
When it comes to inflation, gas is something like, I look at gas as, it is a bit of a luxury. I don't have to travel to the lake in the summer.
True.
It's my decision to fill my gas tank up and head to the lake. But when it comes to heating my home and natural gas prices, that's where I get really, really concerned. Are you just as concerned as, if there's anything that keeps me up at night, it would be the cost of energy and heating my house?
Yeah. I mean, Saskatchewan, the one thing we do have is we have utility bundles, and ours is one of the lowest ones in the country compared to other provinces.
The price of natural gas did go up, though.
Yes.
I guess it had to.
And it has to.
Yeah.
I mean, we have infrastructure that has to be maintained. I mean, we have been blessed, and this is what I said. You said nothing is happening in the province. There's a lot happening in our provinces. There's a lot of investment happening in this province over the next while. It's already begun with, for instance, BHP Billiton continuing with their $12 billion Jensen Mine project, which they weren't going to. After they got to the second phase, they were going to put it on hold. But that But those industries, and whether it's the expansion to Cargill or the new diesel plants or the lithium plants, they need power. They need water. They need things to make their industries work. So we have to, you know, be competitive in that field and ensure that, you know, they have the power that they need to. And that means investment. It means that we have to have rates that allow them to put money back into the infrastructure that is needed to keep industries going, which means jobs for everybody.
I should have prefaced it by saying, if there was anything negative that happened in politics, it happened in Alberta. There was a lot of good things that happened in Saskatchewan. There just was a lot of good things. Let's face it. There was.
Absolutely. Alberta, you know, I mean, the big story over there.
Some people
was
shot
the leadership
themselves in the
race.
Foot a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But ours was the fact that Saskatchewan is moving ahead. We have, you know, strong investment happening in this province. We've created more jobs. Our unemployment rate is at 4.1, the second lowest in the country. You know, we're moving ahead. We're hopefully going to be operating on all 8 cylinders by the end of this year and have people, you know, happy that they are, employed, that they're working, that they're supporting their families, and that's important to us.
Okay, not everybody agrees with us when we say that things are, you know, positive in Saskatchewan. The NDP has pointed out that Saskatchewan is very low in creating new jobs. Are we?
No, we've created a lot more.
Well, I
new
saw
jobs.
Carla Beck had a chart the other day that said we were 10th in the province.
No.
Or 10th in the country.
It depends on who's showing those stats. We have created even in the last month, there's been 7,700 jobs added to this province. And yes, they're not maybe all new jobs, and there may be jobs that are coming back online from businesses that are rehiring people, right? That had let them go prior to. But it's still jobs, and it's still supporting people and families in our province. So, you know, if they want to negate that and say, well, they're not brand new jobs, I'm sorry. Those people would say, yes, I got a job. And it's important to recognize that.
When we talk about energy, there's a lot of talk about nuclear in Saskatchewan. And it was a while back, and I think you and I have talked about this before too, where there was a push here for a nuclear power plant. I remember, I think we had some people from Bruce who had even done some chats
preliminary
at the Vic-Juba Theater.
Yeah, some, and looking around the province.
And that, you know, that back then, nuclear was a word everybody was scared of. I don't feel like people are as scared as they used to be. So would this area be looked at now for a small reactor?
I think that, you know, the plan is they've already sort of chosen a site based on the availability of the things that are needed to create these small nuclear reactors, because that's what they are. And yes, you know, the fear of small of reactors was, you know, negative thing, right? But the technology and the advancements that have been made in that industry are phenomenal. And, you know, I think one of the things that still might be of a concern is storage capacity, right, of the, you know, the yellow cake or whatever you want to call it. And that may be something that's still worked on, but that's something that has to be taken into consideration when they're looking at the areas where they're going to put these. But there is work being done. As you know, Ontario's already moved ahead. They've already picked a spot. They've worked with a provider, and we're watching them very closely to see how it's implemented, and that will be part of their determinant of where.
Yeah, no decision's been made.
No decision has been made at this point in time. But what has been noted is that we thought this may not happen for the next 15 to 20 years. It's moving up the scale a lot faster than we hope. And we do have to look at alternative energies. SaskPower is investing in other alternative energies as well, and this is just one of them that we need to ensure that we have good power source in this province. As you know, I mean, I have the odd power outage too for a few minutes sometimes. So, and it does happen, so we need to have reliable power source in this province for all these investments that we want to see and come here.
I don't think a lot of people understand when it comes to Saskatchewan first and Alberta first. So when I mentioned negativity in Alberta, one of the things that got a lot of negativity was the Sovereignty Act.
Right.
Saskatchewan goes ahead and they have Saskatchewan First Act.
Yes, which was passed.
And passed unanimously.
Yes.
So what is the difference between Why in Saskatchewan isn't it receiving the pushback that it is in Alberta? I don't understand what the difference is between, like, we have Alberta saying, we have an NDP government saying this is no good for our province, and in Saskatchewan it passes unanimously. What was the, was it the wording? What was, because they're basically the same, aren't they?
Somewhat. We have stayed within, in our Saskatchewan First Act, we have stayed within the confines of the Constitution. You know, we're pushing that it's already there. Our ability as a province to manage our own natural resources, our own property rights, all those kinds of things are already there. We just have to ensure that, you know, the federal government understands that and is very clear on it. And we're going to work within those same boundaries that's already there. I mean, this was put in place 1930. It's already in there. It got redebated when Pierre Elliott Trudeau came along in the 1982. So Section 95A specifically still says that. Alberta, I believe, has stepped somewhat outside of that with their Sovereignty Act. And whether they end up with bigger legal challenges or not because of it, I think that's the difference here. Whereas we're saying we're going to just keep doing what we rightfully can do within the Constitution and push ahead. And we've got actions in place that we're already doing, and we're going to keep moving ahead with it. And if you want to sue us, sue us. Let's flip it around. It's usually us suing the federal government. This time, come to us if you think we're doing something wrong.
So why did you feel like you had to do that then? If it's already there...
Well, because of the changes that the federal government's make, the,
changes
the
like
impositions,
what?
Carbon tax, the clean fuel standard taxes that are coming, the electricity emissions,
so would this,
all
would...
of those things belong to control of the provinces because they're part of our natural resources and our industries that we are promoting and are using as resources to keep our houses, you know, warm and safe for everybody. And they have stepped out aside of that in order. The Nome Pipeline, see Bill C-69, that belongs to a province to determine whether or not they want a pipeline across the province, right? That stopped industries. Industries put millions of dollars into the National Energy Board applications and making sure they were following all the regulations for the federal government to say, nah, sorry, we're going to change them now at the last minute. They all pulled out. The tanker ban. Bill C-48, you know, we can't ship our oil anywhere, right? So, you know, shutting down the Keystone XL pipeline, those are all things that belong to provinces according to the Constitution. So we are just pushing to say we should be in charge of that.
So when it comes to a carbon tax, we've already found out there's nothing we can do about it, right?
Right.
But clean standard fuel, would that be, is
that
going to be
something we can do and
we can challenge?
We can challenge.
Okay.
On our end of it.
What about EVs by 2035? And this belief that we can have 20% even by 2027 or something like that. Like, nobody really believes that we can reach these goals.
No. And we can't. So that's why we're moving ahead with what we think we need to do.
But would that be in the Saskatchewan First Act?
Absolutely. Under those electricity emission standards, and we'll be deciding whether or not SAS Power wants to move ahead with more of those. They are doing some work on it. There is going to be, as you know, there are people that are also adamant about the fact that EVs are great. You know, I mean, there's no denying, Kurt, that there is some changes to our weather, mm-hmm. right? But the federal government is using climate change as a guise in order to enforce and impose these taxations is basically what they are on the people of Canada.
Well, I'm all for an EV. Like, I'm absolutely for any green energy that works.
Yeah.
But it has to be proven to me that it works.
Absolutely. And there's still challenges around that.
There's
as
a
we
lot
know,
of
with
challenges
batteries,
around that.
Yeah, with battery capacity and things. And you know, until it reaches a stage where it's efficient and does work for the you know, for the regions that they're being supplied to, I think that, you know, there's still technology that needs to be worked on in order to get there. So, I mean, it's not that we aren't prepared to, you know, to ensure that, you know, that we have the ability to provide them to people that want them and to be able to use them. I'm sure our SAS Power, SAS Energy, all of these guys will be working on it. That's not a problem. but we haven't reached there yet.
And we haven't reached the infrastructure, as you said.
Absolutely. It's the infrastructure that is important, and that's a cost. And if SAS Power is being taxed to the nines on carbon taxes and electricity standards and emissions, and they have to make all those changes, that's a lot of money, billions of dollars that they have to pay, and they can't turn around and invest in the infrastructure that's needed for EVs.
Well, okay, since we're talking about the federal government, let's talk about 2023 and the wording that has been used early in 2023 is just transition. That is, when I heard that, I think I threw up my cereal. Like, I threw up a little bit in my mouth when I heard the federal government. I think it was Jonathan Wilkinson, is that his name? Mm-hmm. When he had said about, you know, we're going to be introducing just transition legislation this year. I honestly just about, like, I felt this lump in my stomach because that is language that has been used in other places where energy bills have gone
through the roof.
And plus, we all know that there's a workage shortage in Alberta and Saskatchewan when it comes to oil and gas. So, like, this wording scares me. Does it scare you?
It scares me, but at the same time, I believe as we go back to the Saskatchewan First Act and drawing the line, we've decided that, you know, if the federal government is willing to sit down at the table with us and have those conversations and partner with us on, if it is a transition, we can't just happen. It just can't happen within the next 5 years. It's just not going to happen. We cannot do that. Right? That there has to be, they have to play ball. And you know, we have to be the ones to draw the line and say, we're not going there yet.
Well,
you
know? 5 years, I mean, we're talking about decades here of oil and gas needed yet.
Absolutely. Well, look what's happening in Europe right now, you know, with their reliance on oil and gas that's been cut off by Russia. And they're having to burn their trees, you know, kind of thing. So it isn't going to happen here if we can have anything to do with it. And that's why I'll back up a little bit. The Saskatchewan First Act actually came out of this constituency. Back in 2017-18, my executive actually brought it to the table that there needed to be some discussion with our provincial government around autonomy. And that resolution was taken to my caucus at the time. And we discussed it as a caucus, and everybody was on board with it. And we included in there the immigration piece of it, that we should be in charge of our own immigration numbers and who comes to this province, not the federal government, who gives us, you know, an allotment every year. And the fact that we've also put forward that we want to collect our own corporate income tax as well, you know, kind of thing, so we can decide where it gets spent, not ship it off to, you know, not have Ottawa collect it and then decide how much, if any, they want to ship back.
Like Quebec does.
Yeah, like Quebec does, right? Yeah. So those are things that we've included in our Saskatchewan First Act, and we plan on holding the line on these things and making sure that, you know, we move forward. So it started here, and that discussion started here, went to caucus. Caucus said, yep. And that's when we decided that it was going to become legislation, that we were going to put something forward. So we were actually ahead of Alberta, as much as people think that, are you hearing what Alberta's doing? Saskatchewan was ahead of them.
So 2 years after Justin is elected, you guys start saying, hey, this doesn't suit us, this doesn't suit us. And it's mostly because of oil.
Yes.
It's centered around that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is that we weren't allowed to get our product to market. And yet, you know, now you see the price going up and we're still being held ransom. So we have to push forward and do something.
I can't be the only person that's asked you about just transition. You must be getting some calls from
a few, but
concerned
not,
people.
It hasn't. I don't think.
Is it because it hasn't been tabled yet?
No.
Like, we don't know
and
what
people,
it's going to say.
We don't know what's in there. Just like anything else.
But the wording would indicate.
They never tell us anything that's right. In there.
This is what it is.
After the fact, this is what it is.
You
right?
go wait in this
when
room
they,
and we'll tell everybody else.
When they pass the legislation, right? Once they've passed it, then all of a sudden here it is. So, I mean, we have no idea what's in there either.
Yeah. But you're not getting as many calls as I thought you would?
I'm not getting as many calls, but I think people hear those words, but they don't understand what it is yet. But I think once it hits them, you know, they're going to be saying, whoa, I need to heat my home. I need to have these things happening. I need to wear clothes.
Well, when it comes to employees, Like, what would be a good just transition? Like, what would be a, like, because you had said, well, the, you know, the weather's going to change. Like, we see the weather changing. Oh, yeah. So we have to do something, you know, when we look at that. But so when it comes to what could they do?
Well, I think our industries.
What could they introduce that would be good?
Well, I think supporting our industries, for one thing, is to say and acknowledging the fact that they've already been working on reducing their, you know, CO2 emissions and things. All of our industries in this province, whether it's oil and gas, agriculture. I mean, you go to these agriculture shows, my gosh, the amount of changes that industry has made in order to support our soils and our crops and the things and our water usage, you know, in this province is just phenomenal. And I think our federal government doesn't recognize those. They've just decided to plan what they think is happening and have no idea, you know, that our industries are doing much more than they realize to ensure that they are mitigating any CO2. They are recapturing even, you know, Cenovus here has a recapture line. So, I mean, you know, they've already moved ahead on some of this stuff.
When was the last time anybody from the federal government visited this area? Have they been out here since you've been MLA?
No.
They haven't even been to Lloyd?
No.
I know the invitation has been there.
Oh, absolutely. And I know our premiers across the province are always pushing back on the, you know, Trudeau-Singh coalition down there with regards to, you know, anything that they're trying to impose on us. They meet regularly. They have conversations regularly. And for the vast majority of them, they're on side with pushing back on the federal government. So I do know that, you know, the premier has sent letters. I know, you know, Daniel Smith has recently even just sent a letter, you know, pushing back on them. So the West is pretty much united out here. Manitoba, a little bit different, I would say, to some extent, and I think that's because of maybe transfer payments to some extent that they're afraid that they may not get if they stand behind us. So,
okay, you mentioned that the premiers are united. They're also united around healthcare. They want to talk to the federal government about healthcare.
Yes.
We know that healthcare has taken a huge hit in Western Canada, for sure. I mean, it's a national problem, but in Western Canada, where we're based, we see it all the time with ambulance delays and all kinds of things like that. I know that you worked with when Alberta had introduced their legislation about keeping their ambulances in their own province, that you worked with Pearsland to make sure that they had service. And things like that. But when we look at what's happening with our wait times in emergency, people have trouble getting a doctor. What is the province's solution? And because Justin Trudeau says, I can't just give you money. That's been his thing. I can't just give you money. I have to give you money and tell you where it's going to go.
And he wants to know exactly where, you know, that you spent it exactly on that. There's no flexibility in where that money goes, which needs to happen because every province is different. But of course it doesn't. And as we know, you know, healthcare budgets, it was a 50-50, you know, for many, many years. And then slowly they started pulling back and they're only putting 22% into our province right now as far as healthcare, and the rest we have to come up with within our budgets, right? So it is a challenge. It is a challenge across the province, across the world. And of course, COVID really brought a lot of that to light, as we know, with regards to healthcare services everywhere. And so our government put together a four-point plan, healthcare plan, back in the summertime. The ministers were doing some traveling around the province, met with healthcare workers in a number of facilities. Minister Hinley was here in June, actually, did a tour of the hospital, Jubilee Home, met with a number of groups and staffing folks and talked about the needs in our community. And then a four-point healthcare plan was put in place. And that is to recruit, train, incentivize, and retain healthcare workers. And that includes physicians, right? So they have been, the first thing they did was in their travels around the province, they found that there are positions that were part-time positions, and they took 175, or they took a number of these part-time positions and created 175 full-time positions in rural places in Saskatchewan. And the reason for that is, you know, we've increased our nursing numbers, we've increased our physician numbers, we've increased our care aid numbers, but when they're coming out of their programs, they want full-time work. They have student loans to pay. They have living costs, right? And if they're asked to move to a rural community and only getting 6-7 hours a week because they're on a part-time schedule and maybe not as many hours that they need, that's very difficult. And that's hard to get young folks to come to. So by creating full-time positions in these rural communities, there's an opportunity for them to go back home and live, if it's back in their own community, and work there as a healthcare worker and make some money to pay off their loans and to live comfortably. So we did that right off the bat.
That was
one of the first things that was done, and that's been quite successful. Not all the spots have been filled, but they were advertised. I know that I believe we had about 6 of them at our hospital here and in our care facilities. I couldn't tell you if they're all filled or not, but there was the opportunity for people to find those spots. And then after that, it was to recruit and make sure that we have, you know, an increased number of healthcare workers, specialty care workers in psychiatry and a number of areas that we needed. And so Philippines has always been a place where we know that we can work with them. And our minister went over there with a team. And we immediately had, before they even got there, 400 applications of people. But it was set up in a way that, you know, people that they interviewed already, you know, they could look at to see what educational background they had, what more needed to be done. But it was also to help to say, okay, if we're going to accept you, what's the process to get you there if there needs to be passports, if there needs to be immigration papers filled, and additional education. And so at this point in time, I think we've successfully, out of the numbers that we were hoping to get, we're at 160 already committed and coming. So it's been a really, really good, but part of that was also to provide an incentive, as I said. And that incentive was $30,000 to $50,000, depending on, you know, what their background is and what their, you know, degrees are. And it's to encourage them to go to our rural communities, and they have to make a commitment of 3 years in order to get that money. And initially it was just for new and international, and we backed up a little bit on that, and anybody that wants to go out to a rural community can access that incentive as well.
Anybody. Locally, what is the big concern here? Like, I consider myself pretty blessed. I haven't really needed the hospital, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, when I did need an EMT, when my dad went through his ordeal, they were there right away. What is the big concern locally?
You know,
is it just the wait times?
No, it isn't just wait times. We hear about wait times, and
I shouldn't say just wait times.
No,
I mean,
there are wait times everywhere, right?
That's more what
I meant. And you know what? I'm not the triage nurse. I am not the physician in the hospital. So, you know, it's up to them to do the triaging and determining, you know, who gets to see the doctor first, you know, kind of thing, based on their situation. And so, yes, I do hear about the ones that are upset because, you know, they thought they waited longer than they needed to. But as I said, there is a process at the hospital, and folks have to understand that. We do have a bit of a shortage on physicians right now in this community. And we've been through this before. One of the challenges that we are having, there are foreign physicians that are interested in coming here. And I was able to set up a meeting between the Minister Merriman, the Minister of Health, along with 3 physicians from our community here to talk about the international program that Saskatchewan has, the SIPA program, which is the Saskatchewan Immigration Physician Program. And it is a recruitment program that allows foreign physicians to come to our province, go through a licensing process and about a three-month orientation process to make sure that the standards that they're using, you know, meet the standards that we have for healthcare in our province. And one of the challenges, this is the federal government again, problem that we have is the requirement that the federal government has for these foreign physicians that want to come here is they must have a PR status, a permanent residency status, before they get here and go through the assessment program. So we are currently working on that with the minister, and he's trying to work with the federal government because we have some very, very strong indications from some of these doctors that they're quite able to provide the services but don't necessarily have that PR status. And as we know, when they apply for it, it takes years under the federal government for them to get it. So we could have them here tomorrow if that wasn't in place.
Could they even buy property for 2 years?
Nope.
They can't do that?
Nope.
Right?
No.
Under the new laws.
Under the new.
That just kicked in 2023.
Yeah.
You have to be here for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Before you can buy property.
Yeah. And they don't have that permanent residency status. So, I mean, that's why they can't even get here. So we're.
The two don't mix.
So we're trying to say, you know, that there's a need for physicians in this country. It isn't just in Saskatchewan. And, you know, you need to adjust and change in order to accommodate what is needed in healthcare right now. But they're still holding strong on that one. So we'll see where we get on it. The other thing I am hearing it's not just, you know, with regards to the hospital and wait times, is long-term care. As we know, that's been an issue in this community. As you know, probably, I think it was in August, we turned over the Lloydminster Continuing Care Facility and the Dr. Cook back over to Alberta Health Services. They were under SHA prior to that and, you know, operational by SHA, but now AHS has that. But what I'm hearing most and most of the calls that I get, as a matter of fact, I just had one again yesterday, is with regards to placement. We have approximately, according to SHA, about 110 long-term care beds in our area, not just in our community, but within our area. And
Maidstone would be one that I can think of.
There's St. Walburg, kinds of places, right, in Saskatchewan. And it is a challenge because the wait times are getting shorter, I must agree, but the only problem we have is that, you know, if they're in the hospital and need to go to a long-term care facility because they can't go home and get home care, that the family is being pushed to put them in places outside of the community where they can't visit them, where they can't get to them on a regular daily basis, and they may have been visiting them all this time. And so that's a frustration not only for the person that's been taken away from their home and their community, but is also for the families. And so when the minister was here in June, he acknowledged the fact that Jubilee Home is the only Saskatchewan long-term care facility in Lloydminster here. And it has reached its end of life. It's 37 plus years old, and to spend money in refurbishing it or adding on to it, it's a 50-bed facility, would be more than replacing it. So we are on the capital list for replacement, but it's still down the road.
It won't be in 2023, that's what you're saying?
Nope.
Yeah.
Or 2024.
Or 2024, okay.
But I have been working on a new idea.
Okay.
I can't share it with you at this point in time, but I've been working and advocating for some healthcare facilities that may get bumped off the list a little quicker.
Speaking of getting
15 years. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, even
that would be bumping up.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Considerably. So there is a need for a new long-term care facility in this community. And as you've probably heard, there is an organization, the Hospice on the Border Society as well. Working with them as well as some other partners, I'm hoping that the proposal might move ahead sooner rather than later.
Speaking of moving up, we need a new arena here in Lloydminster. You've seen the price tag of this arena.
I have.
So as a citizen of this area, And like, there's been some pushback from the community of, do we really need an arena that's $100 million, and do we really need the baseball diamonds that go with it, and this and that? What are your thoughts on that, Colleen? Because I look at it and I go, I don't want to see something happen like happened with the Service Sports Center. We have a Service Sports Center which is a great facility for what it is. However, it does not meet the needs of the community when it comes to larger events. When it comes to things, you know, like having people in the stands.
Right.
So I don't want to see something happen like happened with that, where I'm not saying it's at its end of life. I'm not saying that at all.
No.
But what I'm saying is we need a new arena. Why wouldn't we build a new arena and a new area that we can rely on for 60 years rather than in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, we're going to say, this thing's life on it is gone. Do you look at things that, like, do you look at it that way?
Well, I get to hear about it. Let's put it that way.
I bet you do. Yeah.
You know, and we just talked about healthcare facilities.
Yeah.
You know, so where you see that is the fact that, you know, you have citizens who utilize, you know, the facilities for hockey, for, you know, basketball, for soccer, for all the kinds of things. And so they probably are on board with needing more arenas, meaning more rinks, more facilities. And then there's, you know, the citizens that, you know, maybe don't utilize those facilities as much and saying our dollars could be spent better on healthcare, on something else, right, in our community.
Yeah.
So you're always going to get that from back and forth. I think the city was kind of caught a little bit in between because they were supported by both the Alberta and the Saskatchewan government with some funding for the arena. So either they were going to have to commit to moving ahead with the new arena or not and let the money go. So I think that was a bit of a pressure for them in their decision making, whether or not it needs to be the 100 plus million arena that and facility that they're planning. I'm not sure that was necessary when it started out at 80 million, right? And now has ballooned. And of course that we know is inflation as well.
Yeah.
And the cost of getting materials, you know, that's going to happen. And we just happen to be in that stage right now.
Yeah.
So it is a tough decision for the city. I know that. And I think they tried their very best to get surveys and to get people to respond. So if people chose not to respond and are still complaining, well, you know what? The opportunity was there. So
we talked to the mayor about grants. Mm-hmm. He's brought up grants a lot. What do you take back with you to Regina? And will we see could we possibly see anything in a budget sooner rather than later for
It depends on what the grant he's looking for. Like I said, they did get a grant for that. They were already offered.
I didn't know that. Like when he was here, he didn't mention that.
Well, they were. And I think that's why they had to make the decision whether to move ahead with it or not. They were provided.
Okay, maybe he did. He's just looking for more.
And he probably is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of the inflationary costs and the ballooning. Because like at initially, you know, their part of it, it was a three-way thing. It was a lot less than probably what it is now.
Are we gonna,
and that's probably why he's getting pushback, because the, you know, inflationary costs have ballooned, which means the portion for this city is greater.
You would agree, though, we need something.
Oh, yeah. I think that, you know, he showed back last year already when they did, you know, building assessments. I shouldn't be talking on behalf of the city, but I know that they did put out building assessments, you know, for the arenas and the rinks and the things that we have here. And some of them, same thing. They are reaching the end of their life, and the amount of money that you would need to put in order to do, you know, even the heating systems in some of these. I mean, I look at the exhibition ground right now. If you've been out there,
yep.
They're jackhammering out because they need to redo their water lines and the things that are in the convention center there.
Yep.
They've reached the end of life and are causing some major issues that are cost. Expensive to them and their budget, so they need to do something. So
I guess what I'm asking is, where do you see it on the priority list?
I didn't see it as high on the priority list, to be honest with you, as if we'd have been pushing for you know, infrastructure money for the hospital and for other health facilities in our community.
The other thing that people are concerned in this area about is gun bans. I mean, you heard me off the top say we're going to be broadcasting live from a gun show.
Yep.
Does the Saskatchewan First Act, and I should ask just when we were talking about the Saskatchewan First Act, does it come into play there, or do you need a completely different bill to come forward?
It's a completely different bill. It's already been introduced in the House.
So.
It hasn't gone through all of its readings. We adjourned the House before it did, but the federal government has once again made some changes there on Bill C-21, right? And which has just frustrated the heck out of everybody. And of course, as we know, you listen to them, they don't even know what happened. Their minister put something ahead, and the prime minister didn't even know what was on that list and what was going. And he's talking about, we'll go back and look at it so that hunters and fishermen, the only fisherman I know might use a gun is if you've ever been out halibut fishing. Sometimes if they're a little bit big, they will use a 22 to shoot it before they bring it in the boat. so it doesn't, break somebody's leg. But we have put some things in place under our, as you know, Saskatchewan, hired Robert Friedberg as our new CFO in Saskatchewan. So we were doing this already, knowing some of this stuff was coming down the pipe, and are working on some legislation right now that would make it very difficult for the federal government to come and seize firearms.
To take your guns.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to buying those guns, that might be a different story.
No, that's part of it
too. That'll be part of it too.
That will be part of it too. I mean, as you heard, they were, Minister Tell had said right off the beginning that we will not be using any law enforcement resources in order to go out and check and seize guns from people. That just isn't happening because that's not their job. Their job is to provide protection and safety for the people of our community, and that doesn't mean going around asking people for their, their PAL registrations and their their firearms. So that is something we said right off the bat, and so in the meantime, we've also put together some legislation. One of the things is in November, when they put out the new changes on it, I'm just going to, because
there
I want to be clear on this, the amendments. And these amendments do nothing to target illegal firearms and shows a further disconnect between the federal Liberal government and legal firearm owners across Saskatchewan and Canada. Because as we know, the criminals don't care. They don't have licenses and they get their guns illegally. But we're also putting together one of the things that we've moved forward on is a ballistics lab in this province.
Yes.
So if guns are seized, they will have to go through a ballistics lab, which means that they will be assessed and they will have to provide the right dollars for that.
I think there's a lot of people that didn't realize we didn't have a ballistics lab in Saskatchewan.
We didn't, but we are moving forward on one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Colleen, is there anything else that you're getting concerns about from your constituents that I haven't mentioned? We've touched on healthcare and guns and the energy is the big one.
Yes. Power bills. I mean, I understand it. And of course, as you know, Lloydminster is unique when it comes to how gas is provided, how electricity is provided in this community.
Is it ever?
It's divided, and there is still a pocket within this community that they must use an Alberta provider, but don't see the benefits on their bills that, other Albertans would as well. So I do get to hear about those, but the response that I have provided to them is it's actually a city issue when it comes to particularly the power, because the city has an agreement, an actual contract in place with SAS Power on that. And unless they're willing to work with SAS Power on the contract that they have in place to change those rates or provide some sort of a subsidy or whatever, those residents, meaning you, are stuck with using an Alberta provider. Our city was developed in pockets, right, in different areas without any indication of that. Sask Energy came later to the game, So, of course, but Sask Energy has been able to work with Alberta on the natural gas aspect of it, and they've been able to provide the rates to those customers in that area. If you have an account with Sask Energy, they can adjust them.
Really?
Yeah. You have to sign up and have an account, even though you're being billed by Alberta.
So if I have an EPCOR,
you can phone Sask Energy. You have to sign up, I believe it is, by October. It doesn't happen right away. It won't take kick until the next year. But if you have a Sask Energy account, they can provide you with whatever the rate Sask Energy have, because then they work with Alberta on.
Does it cost anything?
Nope. Not to sign up. Nope. So you can, as long as you have a Sask Energy account, you can get the Sask Energy rates, because then they cover off the difference between what Alberta is and whatever.
Right.
But as far as power goes, that's another whole story.
Well, so
you can't change that at this point in time, unless the city, whenever that contract comes up, decides to renegotiate it for that area particularly in a different way.
Back in September, I had to switch providers.
Yeah.
And I had to switch providers. It sounded to me like because one of those Lloyd Minster residents made a stink about not getting $50 back
right.
on. Yeah. Which really, really, I'm not going to lie, pissed me off, because my rate was way better for the next 3 years than it would have been. Some lousy $50, I could care less.
Right.
I was paying like per gigajoule. Yeah. I didn't give a shit about getting the... It really, I would like to know who that person was. I really, really would like to find out who that person was.
There are people
or who
that,
these people were.
There are people in that area that, you know, every little penny.
Can you tell I got a little angry? I got a little angry there.
Right. But I just had someone in my office this week actually on that issue, and was able to share with him that, you know,
it's I didn't
the
know
city
that. Yeah.
that has a contract with Sask Power. And if we were to, you know, try to change that rate or subsidize it in any way, we'd be breaking a legal contract.
Thank you, Colleen. Thank you for
your
time.
You're welcome.
It is really, really appreciated, and I hope it's not as long as it was last time between visits.
Yeah. I'd be happy to come back anytime. As I said, Saskatchewan is moving ahead. There's a lot has happened in the last year, even though we haven't talked.
There's been a lot of positive, actually.
Yes, it actually is. Our wholesale rates, our merchandise exports, our retail trade numbers are all up. We're doing extremely well compared to other provinces. We're probably second in line for just about everything right now. So.
Do you think we'll be sheltered from this recession they keep talking about?
I wouldn't know how to answer that one. I mean, all we can do is watch, and, you know, we had, you know, put an affordability plan in place, and, you know, if there's changes need to be made, we'll probably, you know, have to reconsider some of the things. You know, our budget will come out here in March. I'm sure, like in healthcare, we'll probably have to see some increases because of our human health resources plan, and healthcare is going to have some additional cost to it. There's no doubt about that. In order to stabilize our healthcare worker staffing across the province, so I'm sure there we will. We've already increased benefits to seniors to some extent, but with inflationary costs, it's something we'll probably have to go back and look at as well, right? So, you know, we'll just keep an eye on it and, you know, some of those affordability things, but we are pushing to ensure that we continue to pay down our debt. If there are additional funds there, that is really important to us as a government, and at the same time ensuring that, you know, economy keeps moving in this province, because as we know, that's what pays the bills and makes sure that we have a good education system, healthcare, and social service system in this province.
Thanks, Colleen.
You're more than welcome.
We'll be back again on Saturday, and we're going to talk to Brian Robinson and Janine Merriweather. They have done a lot of work with the cross-country ski trails in our area, and this is a sport that really took off during the pandemic. So we're going to talk about those renovations, those adjustments that have been made on Saturday, 11 o'clock, right here at the new Lloydminster Nissan.